sit right down. Daddy, let your mind move on.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Valiant Versus, a podcast where we look at Valiant different iterations of titles and see how they stack up against each other. Also, play with other things like how Valiant does in the marketplace versus other companies and other things like that. And sometimes we might even look at a Valiant book that's currently published for a month and how it compares with some comics from other companies. So that's what the Valiant podcast is about. It originated and has several issues or episodes already out and was published on the Valiant podcast on the Taylor Network, so you can get old issues of that. But I am moving it just so I can control when I release it and how I release it. Which is on my network on the Geek Brunch podcast, so.com. And that's where the future home of this podcast will be. My goals are to try to do 2 a month, but as life gets in the way and work and everything else, it'll likely become 1 a month because I've already do several podcasts. I do Geek Brunch, which is twice monthly. I do Geek Brunch Retro Cast, which is twice monthly. I do DC Noise, which is either once a month or twice a month, depending on when we can get everybody together. I do the Valiant podcast, which is kind of like monthly, but has been away for a while. And I'm going to be doing another podcast, which I'm not at liberty to tell about it yet, because I'm just part of, I'm not running it or anything. So I'll announce that soon. So there's quite a few podcasts. I've been podcasting since like 2006, pretty much nonstop. So it's almost going to hit 10 years. It's been quite a while. It's been a fun ride. I've met a lot of really cool people through podcasting that I wouldn't have met otherwise. And I like talking about comics. That's why I enjoy it. That's why this podcast is a little weird. This one in Mike M's Weekly Reads, because I'm not talking to anybody but myself. But I find them interesting to do, to like gather my thoughts. Like, I don't prepare notes or any of that stuff. I just kind of talk off the cuff, and that's the way most of my podcasts are. I don't really prepare for them. I just go with the flow. But in opening up this Valiant Versus, I had a lot of things to choose from, and I went with something that I wanted to get into just because I wanted some sci-fi, and I wanted to really delve into the character, and I have to I want to start reading more of him because I always enjoyed it. I've always been fascinated with this character, and it's a Valiant character, but it's also a Gold Key character. That's who really owns it. And there's been several license iterations of it. So this is going to be a fun one because it's not contained within the Valiant properties. It's contained in other licensing. Gold Key was the original publisher, and that's the one that I'm going to start with. And then we had Dynamite take a hold of it. Well, actually, it was Valiant. And then after Valiant, there was some weird company that I don't even know what its name was. They did a one-shot. And then we had Dark Horse and then Dynamite, which is the current publisher. And hopefully Dynamite will keep the property or release the property to somebody who will do something with it. Because I am a huge fan of the Gold Key characters. And I find Magnus unique. And I loved him in the way in the Valiant universe. I love the way that they used him to link stuff together from the future to the past and etc. I'm still getting over this like throat thing. So if I pause here and there, it's to get a drink of water and such. But before we get into that, Magnus has had, you know, several titles. He's had, if we go back, oh, iBooks was the other one in 2005. So we have Magnus, robot fighter from Gold Key that ran from 1963 to 1969 and had some reprints and other such things through 1971 and 1977. And then again, they did something with it in 2004. But you jump from there to Valiant, who used the property there. And from 1991 to 1996, which eventually became Acclaim, and they had their volume from 1997 to 1998. And then I think we go to iBooks, which only had one book that came out in 2005. And from there, oh, also Valiant did publish the original Magnus Robot Fighter, you know, it's the first few issues. And Dark Horse has reprinted those in hardcovers and paperbacks, which I highly recommend if you don't want to go buy the individual issues because they're quite expensive. You also had, during the Dark Horse Valiant team up, we had a Predator versus Magnus Robot Fighter. And we had Vintage Magnus Robot Fighter in 1992. So there's quite a bit of stuff going on here. We also had Gold Key, Dynamite in 2014 to 2015, and Dark Horse was in 2010. That was a shortly lived one, but man, once I sat down and really digested what Jim Shooter was doing with this reincarnation of the characters, even like Mighty Samson and stuff, I really started to fall in love with this stuff, and I wish it was collected. I know the Dynamite stuff is collected, and there's a few collections of some of the older stuff, but most of the stuff that is collected is the Gold Key stuff, which I'm grateful for, because that's where I own it. But I also own like the original Magnus Robot Fighter, which was the reprint, and Vintage Magnus Robot Fighter. So having said that, I'm going to jump into this book, but I'm going to take a real pause for the cause here because I just missed a phone call. Sorry about that, but I'm not professional at this, even though I've been doing it forever. I just do it because I love it. I don't care about the professionalism of it. And you could probably tell there's coughs, there's sneezes, I don't even edit. Sometimes I'll edit blank space, but that's it. Or when I cough, I could see huge spikes in the audio as I'm recording, and those are easy to find and edit out because the volume just goes whoosh. And so, without further ado, I'm going to kick this one off. I want to try to keep the episodes fairly short. And I'm going to go over on the Valiant Versus how they performed in November sales numbers. Remember, these are the numbers that are sold to retailers. They're not sell-through numbers. So what that means is there could still be books on the shelf that are unsold or books that are on the shelf that are returnable. Sometimes Diamond will have a little asterisk on there, and that means they have like a returnability. And the percentages would be fascinating to know what that really is. I would imagine it's based on the publisher. On how many returns they get by the publisher, that would be fascinating to know. Because my theory, and I don't know shit about retailing, is that most retailers, in my opinion, are too lazy and don't want to pay shipping or whatever to get the books refunded, so they don't do it. So unless they're like a large distributor it's not worth their while. Plus, most of the shops here, I'm in Colorado Springs, don't even carry Valiant. Like, there's, I don't know, five shops. There might be two that carry it, and the ones that carry it are mostly full box. And the ones that do shelf it, they get like, I don't know, two, three copies and maybe sell one, because I always see two or three copies there from month to month. So, I mean, I don't know how it sells. I'm sure in Denver it's got a bigger market with Mile High and everything. I know Valiant does have a lot of loyal people, and what that means is people that are just dedicated and passionate about the company and very loyal and very offended when you talk about their company in any kind of negative terms. But I look at things kind of neutrally. Like, I love Valiant. I own every single one of their single issues. I guess I don't order these Valiant Adventure books that were in digest format. But as far as the comics and the magazines that have been published by Valiant and Acclaim, I own it all, both incarnations. I don't get the variants anymore. I went through a phase where I would get some of the variants. But I found out I spent a lot of money and I don't really care about them because I don't display them. They end up in a box. I'm not selling them. So there's no reason for me to pay for that. I think it would be worthwhile if that's all I collected. But I collect so much. I get all of the DCs, all of the Marvels, all of, for the most part, Boom Studios, except for their kids' books. Quite a few Dark Horse, Zenoscopes, and all kinds of independent publishers in the back. I'd say 70% of Image I buy, 60% of IDW. So, like, Dynamite almost 100%. So I buy a lot of fucking comics, and I buy so much that I just realized I went through 1,000 bags and boards in a less than 2 month period, which is fucking insane. But that did have a lot of back issue purchasing and stuff going on. But it's still an insane amount of comic books. But I will be talking about a lot about collecting on my other podcast, Mike M's Weekly Reads. I have a lot of topics to talk about. But let's talk about what the observations were for the diamond sales for November. Well, we had at rank 84, Wrath of Eternal Warrior, which sold 32,528 copies. It did have an asterisk, which means some of it's returnable. It did have a lot of incentives and a lot of variants. I think the sales numbers are high for Valiant, at least for some of the numbers, because of the variants, because I think there's a lot of their consumer base that's all in and try to get a lot of the covers. And what that means to the retailers is that person that orders a 1 in 10 or a 1 in 20 or a 1 in 50, they have to order 50 copies for that 1 in 50. And retailers are smart for the most part. Like, they'll know what to mark up that book, based on what they're going to sell in the actual store. So the costs of those variants are going to range dramatically. But Wrath of Eternal Warrior had a lot of variants. They also had a Battle Axe incentive, which I don't know what the actual numbers were for this, but I know that I've heard the numbers and I just can't remember or find it. But if they ordered so many copies of the comic, or maybe it was several Valiant titles, they could get a physical battle axe. I don't know what kind of plastic and stuff it's made out of. It looks amazing. It's an Eternal Warrior battle axe. I would love to have one, but I'm not going to pay an arm and a leg for this thing. I do like some props that Valiant does. Like, I got the Mini Mates, and I have the goat from the first in action figure, and several other things that are going on. I didn't go with the statue just because of cost. If they were in the ballpark of like a DC statue, at the 125 mark or even 150, I would have considered the Bloodshot statue, but it was just way out there. So, like, I do like to get you know, their props and stuff like that, like XO ring and stuff. But there's sometimes, like, if they sold it, if they actually had a diamond order code and I could buy it, I would highly consider it, depending on the cost of the battle axe. But I think the battle axe is why it sold so well at 32,000 copies, plus of all the variants and everything and the incentives. Valiant does really good with incentives with the retailers, so it would drive the bigger retailers to get more copies. So it sold pretty well, and it sold pretty well under a very competitive month. Right now, Marvel is dominating the industry because they're renumbering all their books and giving people jump on points for all their books, even though most of them are continued. Even like Secret Wars didn't happen. It just, Secret Wars was like a break, kind of like Convergence was a break for DC, and you know, most of the main ongoing titles just kept on continuing. But what it does when they do this stuff is Marvel just dominates the market share and they dominate the retailer dollar. So it makes it harder for these other competitors to compete with that, because they have their variants. You know, Marvel will have their variants, plus they have their crazy ass incentives. The ones I really don't like are they do stuff like, if you buy 70% of your orders of this volume, we will give you this at an extremely discounted price. What that tends to do is favor the smaller shop, because, you know, 70% of, you know, 10 copies is an incentive to get something, like it's to get a lower discount. But when you have like a huge shop like DCBS, to get 70% of what you got before is ridiculous. So there has to be a demand for it, and that's why DCBS and other shops will charge an appropriate amount for like a 1 in 100 or a 1 in 50, because they have to recoup the cost, because they know they have their metrics, they know how much they're going to sell, and that's why they mark them up, and that's why it's harder to get. So, you know, it's just supply and demand. But it was a good debut in a very competitive market. As far as the story content for Wrath of Eternal Warrior, it wasn't my favorite. And I think it was because of my disappointment. Even though I enjoyed it in Book of Death finale, I just had no emotional, how could I say, like, I just couldn't attach myself emotionally to what happened with Book of Death 4 in order for that to carry on in Wrath of Eternal Warrior 1 and 2. Even though they're well written, and they're giving a lot of the backstory as far as family and stuff, it didn't personally hit me as one of their best books. But I know a lot of people that are loving it, and that's good, because they need to diversify their line and attract different people. Plus, I'm not the perfect person to target. I'm going to buy it anyway. So they need to target and experiment with things for the people that are going to make a difference. I don't make a difference. I'm just like that flat line that I don't even read the solicits. I just go check the bundle and DCBS, order it, and then I go order the soft covers and the hard covers, and then I'm done. I submit my order. So I'm not a good thing for that point. I really like the second series of Wrath of Eternal Warrior by Peter Milligan. I don't know, there's something about that sort of story, and I think it could be that I sat down and read the whole thing in its entirety from beginning to end instead of read it in a monthly format. I don't think if I read it in a monthly format, I would have enjoyed that particular Eternal Warrior series as much as I did. But I really liked it, and I heard rumor that they may revisit that in the future. Dinesh had mentioned something like that on a Twitter. The next one is my favorite title, even though it goes back and forth between Ninjak and Bloodshot. 193 is Bloodshot Reborn number 8, which sold 8,990 copies. This, to me, I think, is the strongest book out there alongside Ninjak. And it's weird because if I look at the order, with the exception of Wrath of Eternal Warrior, because that number is skewed. Say what you will, but it's skewed. It's an issue one. It has incentives. It's going to be ordered heavily by retailers. It's just the way number ones work. It's the weird thing about retailing is that I think that readers have short attention spans, the general public, and they're always looking for something new. And I think that's what drives the sales content for retailers to order heavily on number ones to see where they're what's driving the market. And they're fighting for that dollar, and they're fighting for that space, and it's just a rough place to be. It even goes on to, like, it goes deeper than that in, like, media. It just goes fucking insane because you have movies that are coming out, like Hasbro recently, you know, just to make another thorn in Valiant's side, recently said they're doing a joint product line, which means that they could have Transformers versus G.I. Joe versus Rom versus, you know, all these different characters, Mask, everything. So everybody's getting into that universe-type storytelling, G.I. Joe, you know, everybody is trying to get into that market share that Marvel and DC have, and DC is gonna, you know, expanding their universe, especially with the Superman, Batman, and Suicide Squad, and everything that's coming up. So all those will be tied together, and then you have all the TV properties. Marvel chooses to link their TV properties with the movies. DC's, which I think is the right move there, keeps to keep them separate because TV and movies to me are different beasts. But they are successful. Marvel's Daredevil and other stuff are just amazing. I'm straying away from what I set out to do just because I talk shit and I just, like, a stream of consciousness just starts blurting out stuff. And that's probably why I don't know if a lot of Valiant fans like my format, because I think Valiant fans are very structured, at least from what I can tell from forums and from other things. And I'm going to talk about something later on. This is going to be a long-ass episode. I apologize. But so we went Bloodshot Reborn, sold really strong numbers. Ninjak, it was at 200, sold 8538 copies, so it's right below Bloodshot Reborn, and that's on issue 9. They're about the same numbering cycle too. And then at 238, Exo Man of War sold 6,604 copies. That one seems to be dropping a little bit. It usually fluctuates around the 7,000 mark. Imperium sold 5,245 copies at rank 267. And that was Imperium 10. Ivar Timewalker, which is the penultimate issue of that series at 270 on issue 11, sold 5,200 copies. Those issues grew on me, especially after they had the team up with the brothers. I started to really get into the story again. And then 12 came out, and I got really confused. I don't know what the fuck happened. And I think it's me missing the boat on that, because some people are seeing that as a masterpiece, and it's just me as confused, probably because I read it at 2 a.m. or something like that, and I just couldn't digest it. And usually, unless I'm really enjoying something, or I don't revisit it just because of the sheer quantity, it's like I have a fire hose of comic books coming in, and I can't stop to pause to reread something, or I'll fall even farther and farther behind in my reading. So unless it's something I'm very curious about, and I do it sometimes, I don't often reread it. And then at 275, we had Unity, which is the last one. At that was issue 24, also a penultimate issue. Oh gosh, I'm gonna have to pause again. Okay, I'm back, and hopefully that'll be the last interruption. But so that wraps up Unity 24 at 4,944 copies. So if you look at this from a total perspective, Valiant sold 72,000 copies, or 72,049 copies, and they averaged about 10,293 copies over 7 titles, as opposed to 9 titles last month. So last month was interesting because they had more sold. They sold 81,842 copies, but they had 2 more titles, and they had a lower average at 9,094 copies. So it sounds like now that they're reducing their line a little bit, that it looks mathematically, at least looking at 2 months, looks like a good strategy. Expand the line. Maybe retailers are a little hesitant for that shelf space because there's a lot of fucking competition. And there's a lot of up-and-comers like Aftershock Comics and 451 Media, which are knocking it out of the park. Like 451, man, woof, those books are damn good. But there's a lot of smaller companies, and then you got Devil's Due coming back with a vengeance and all kinds of stuff. So, man, the competition for that shelf space is crazy. On the trade side, nothing really new. Trades sell what they sell, and we got Imperium at 159, sold 687 copies. That's for the trade paperback, volume 2. At 196, you got Unity volume 6, the Warmonger, at 528, which I really like that character. I hope to see her as an internal warrior, like somebody that shows up in that book, because I really like her character. I love the way Kent wrote her. And plus, she's so foul-mouthed. She's like, motherfucking... She's like, if you go onto Facebook and listen to all these whining people, that's what she's like. But if you... at 224, you got Divinity Deluxe hardcover. 451 copies, and then right behind it at 244 you had the Valiant deluxe hardcover at 404. I wonder if they had spaced those two out a little more so they weren't in the same month, if it would have helped or not. And then you had the 286, the Unity deluxe hardcover volume 1 at 355 copies. So they're all fluctuating in that upper 300s to mid 400s on those deluxe hardcovers. But it was interesting, an interesting month as they got onslaughted by Marvel, and they did what they usually do. And in terms of averages, they did pretty doggone good with less titles, at least in my opinion. But as you look at the rankings, you know, Wrath of Eternal Warrior, Bloodshot, Ninjak, Exo, Imperium, Ivar, Unity, that is my kind of ranking of books, except I would drop Wrath right below Imperium as far as my enjoyment, and I would move Unity above XO probably, even with the creative team change. I've liked that book, so that's just my personal opinion. It means nothing, but that's just my ranking of books. The other thing I want to talk about is selling books on eBay, just briefly. Just some quick recommendations. There are a lot of people on eBay. eBay favors the buyer, so as a seller, you're kind of fucked. Because there could be like buyers that are just not, you know, they're people you don't want to deal with, but you have to deal with. And Valiant buyers are real particular, so you got to be very detailed in your description. And I would state that you're not CGC, you're not a professional grader. Definitely put that on the mark. Tell them that you're willing to send them more pictures if they request them upon request. Take as many pictures of the spine, the top, the back, maybe even the inside as you can. And then the biggest one is, and this is a hit to you as a seller, to play it safe, what I usually do is if I think a book is very fine, I will rate it like a fine, very fine minus to a fine plus. And the reason is I'm taking that grade down for two reasons, because I want to avoid like buyer-seller confliction. And then I shipped U.S. Postal Service, and they're the fucking worst. I swear to God. Even if you do the best to package it, they'll find some way to fuck it up. What I recommend is to get, like, those mailers. And what I usually do is when I order from eBay, I save the mailers. Because these people make these, like, mailers, and I got to figure out how – I think there's, like, a YouTube video how to make them. But they are very, very – hard to bend and hard to break, and if you put the book in there just right, it's like a little bed, a safety bed. But there are people who I think will take advantage of you if you use the wrong words. Some of these variants and stuff will go for high prices because they're 1 in 50s or 1 in 20s and stuff like that, and you want to avoid getting into like a grading paradigm. I think I'm pretty fucking good at grading. Like I understand the Overstreet one and that, but I always take it back, and I know as a seller it's going to hurt me because I'm going from a very fine to a fine, even though I know it's very fine, because I'm taking the risk of the shipping and I'm taking the risk that the buyer might be potentially anal about everything, like every single line on the book. Because I think a lot of those buyers that buy the variants, if you ever watch Clerks, you know, the Kevin Smith movie, there's this one guy with eggs that's looking for the perfect fucking egg. Like, he's standing them up on its side. He's going through all the cartons of eggs to find the perfect set of dozen eggs. I think that a lot of the variant buyers, they're like that. In other words, they look, they'll hold it up in the light, they'll look at every single angle, and if you don't, there's a couple things you could do to protect yourself. Be as descriptive as possible, declare you're not a professional grader, give as many pictures as possible, don't use big words that might lead them to think that something is an immaculate book. When it's not. Immaculate means, man, that's a big word to use. But even though you have the right intent, once you start using these words, these people will take advantage of you. And it's my belief that once they get the books, that a lot of these people still want the books, but they want you to kiss their ass and say, I'll give you a discount. And my opinion is, don't give them the benefit of that. Tell them to ship it back the way that you shipped it back. You know, pay for that. Don't take a big loss on your books. If it turns into that like fighting game, just say refund your money and go about your business. It's a shame that you have to do that, but with some of these things, you're going to have to do it unless you CGC them, which is such a fucking pain in the ass, because CGC guarantees you the grade, and yeah, it's an independent grader. That's fantastic. But yeah, you have to go out of your way to pay for shipping costs to CGC, to pay their fucking fees, get the book back just so you can turn around and sell it again. I don't know. It's just such a hassle. But that is one way to secure your grade. At least you don't have to do what I do and take that grade down. But it's such a pain in the ass, and it's more cost for something that you want to get rid of. So if you're not into hassle, if you're there to make a profit and like totally make money, then yes, you might find that seller, but you got to hope that seller wants to buy a CGC copy. Like, I fucking hate to buy CGC copies. And when I do buy a CGC copy, it's because I want a particular grade, and I want to rip that fucking plastic out and... Because comics are meant to be read, they're meant to open, they're meant to fold. It's just not meant to be that. To me, it just turns into a collective piece of art, and that's fine if that's what you're into. But my mindset is, I want to read it. So if I want to guarantee it, yeah, I might buy a CGC copy. I have one. I bought New Gods number one, and it's CGC'd, but I ripped that fucker out, and I kept the grading of it in and put it in Mylar and halfback. Man, this has gotten off so fucking off tangent. But anyway, the sales did what I think is what Valiant usually does, especially on average. And they did it with less titles, which I think is good. Because sometimes expansion can hurt you, and I don't know what will happen. It'll be interesting to see once they put something out like Faith and Dr. Mirage, who was a low, low seller to begin with. You know, these books are critically acclaimed, but word of mouth and critically acclaimed don't mean shit when it comes to dollars, unfortunately. Because what you're going to find is a lot of books that you love get canceled, and there's nothing you can do about it. I think until the market gets away from physical copies, which I would hate because I love physical copies, I hate digital, just because it's so restful on my eyes. I like the smell, I like the collectability of it. Digital, it's just a bunch of bytes, and it's displayed, and yeah, you can enjoy it for what it is, but it takes away some of the I own it thing, other than you own it in some kind of cloud form or a PDF, which I think is horrible. But yeah, it's until like digital's will change the mindset of sales, and you could see like trends like flip on their ass if we had a insight into the digital sales. What I do know about digital sales, and at least talking to a few people, is that they're still low. And I think it's because of their distribution model. Like, you get sales and stuff, but to pay $3.99 for a digital fucking copy, let's just talk Marvel. If you want a day in release, you're going to pay $3.99 for that fucker. It's going to be digital when you can go to the store, buy the same fucking copy for $3.99, and get the digital copy. So now you have two things. If you want a digital, that's the way I would go, is I'd go that way and then sell the other copy for anything or give it away. And then you have two things, and then you might even get a new reader interested in it if that's what you want. But I am rambling on that, and I talked a little bit about eBay. Just some stuff to protect you, because you as the seller are not going to... Like, I've had some people fuck me but on the... as a buyer, but I don't go after them typically. There's a couple times that I know the buyer sent me stuff, and I could go after the buyer, but I know it's USPS that fucked up because the box was fucking tire tracks on it. And one time USPS had shipped me an empty... This is two times already where I ordered books, I ordered some good Sergeant Rock and Unknown Soldier books and some Superboy that were, you know, from the 70s, and I was real happy to get them. And I got the package, and the fucking envelope was run over five times. The thing was slid open. The USPS taped it. And then I had to go through a two-month, maybe three-month process just to get half my money back. But I knew, because I bought this guy from this guy before, that this guy did no ill will. Like, he did no ill will. And I think most of the sellers out there are not out there to fuck you. They're there to help you get your product in a timely manner and work with you to get it in a timely manner. And I think they're fair. But there are a lot of ones that are like that guy from Clerks that'll sit there and look for the perfect egg. And maybe that's because that's their business model. They want to get that book and they want to flip it for a 9.8 or a 9. And that's fine because that's what they want to do. But just be warned, when you use big words and you don't put the right words in there, your chances are going to hurt you. Always offer as many pictures as you possibly can. Zoom in on the spine, any kind of thing on the cover. You might even want to thumb through the book, because Man, there I have some awesome books from the 70s, man. And as I went through them, I saw some of the coupons or the stamps cut out, like the Marvel stamp, and you're like, oh fuck. So yeah, before you resell any of your books, go through them. I don't sell very many, but when I do sell them, I'll take a little bit of a loss on the grade just so I don't avoid complaints. And I know that a lot of shops do that too, like comic shops, especially when they're selling over the, some kind of electric medium. That goes to, I saw a weird show on the Food Network. It's one of those mystery diners. God, I'm full of shit today. Mystery diners, they actually went to this burger joint which sold comic books. And somebody in the store was stealing the comic books and selling them. And it turned out to be with a cosplayer that they hired to actually act out this guy's comic book. She'd come in like twice a week, steal food, steal comics, and then post them on a site for sale. And there was the way they framed her too. One of the things they did is they took Tales from Suspense issue in there, and I think it was Tales of Suspense. It's the first appearance of Hawkeye, and he went to the counter and he says, "Are you willing to buy this book? And what's it's worth?" And the guy that the kid that was working there was honest. He's like, "I fucking work at a burger joint. I can't afford that book." He said, "I'd love to have it, but it's like $300, 300, $400. I can't afford that." And then he like went to the cosplayer saw him with that book and said, "I'll give you 10. That book's a reprint." It was no fucking reprint. But I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. I'm just a guy making a lot of noise. That's for you, Derek. One of the podcasts I listen to is Comic Book Noise. He actually hosts all these podcasts for me, and good friend. And okay, so having said that, let's get into to Magnus Robot Fighter, which is a Russ Manning book. Who did like the Tarzan newspaper strip back in the day? And if we look at the statistics on this Gold Key book, which I briefly talked about, I'm all over the place, man. What you will find is that it ran 46 issues. There are four hardcovers available and three soft covers for this from Dark Horse, but this is the Gold Key run, and it was Russ Manning on art and as a writer, and that's pretty fucking amazing in itself. So yeah, that when people actually draw it and write it, it's fucking amazing. I just can't imagine this being monthly, and in this case it wasn't monthly. It was like every 3 months that this thing would come out. So like the first one was published in February of 1963, and the next one came out on May 1st of 1963, and then again in August of 1963. So if you look at this, it was pretty sporadic, but this guy did everything, and even the I don't know who did the letter. Do I have that credit? I don't think I do. Yeah, I don't have that credit. But whoever did the lettering was pretty amazing too, because if you notice the robots, they have like little dashes between them, so you read it like, "This is Polrov, Chief, the human robot destroyer in Sector 15, must surrender within 1 hour, or every human in that sector will die." So it's meant for you to, if you read it out loud, it's more fun. But what this is Magnus was raised at the bottom of an ocean by a ro another robot to protect the world against robot threats, and also for robots to from taking over. And what you'll this is really a fascinating concept, and I would love to spend time researching it in terms of media. Like, you have like movies like I, Robot. You have Wall-E, you know. It's just there's a current comic called Tokyo Ghost with which delves in this territory where people are so fucking lazy that they let technology take over. I am loving Tokyo Ghost. Fucking amazing book from Image Comics. Rick Remender and Sean Murphy. Oh my God, Sean Murphy art. But it is such a good book. Highly recommend it if you like this kind of concept where technology is taking over and humanity is losing themselves in the technology. Matter of fact, one of the guys in Tokyo Ghost was so plugged in, and then they took him away from the technology, and he's like going through withdrawals, like any kind of drug would do. But this is Magnus Robot Fighter, and he grows up with 1A, and that robot is very scientific, very methodical. They're flying over Northam one day, and he says, "You're ready to save mankind. I need to drop you in this area." And Paul Robs. It's pretty cool because you have like Repair Robs and Paul Robs and Riot Robs and all kinds of Elevator Robs. It just basically take the word and you put Rob in front of it. It's really cool. They've taken over society. Humanity is just so plugged into entertainment. They're not doing shit. They can't really do shit either because these robots that have manifested I don't know, in their chips and stuff to not serve humans. Basically, number one rule in Robot Fighter is that you will serve human and you cannot harm human. But some of these robots have either been tampered with by a human to change the programming for malicious use, or they're like H8 or otherwise hate. Get that? The one robot that's the police chief of the city. Is he was hit by lightning and manifested a personality, and that's he manifested where he'd protect his own kind and he hated humanity, so he was trying to repress humanity, not let them think for themselves, and this is shown early on as they're running from the pole robs. And Magnus is dropped into a situation where he's just observing stuff. And one of the first thing he observes is he's watching like entertainment where everybody's watching football, but robots are playing football. So they just sit their asses in a chair. But remarkably, this society isn't fat. So somehow they're keeping healthy. I have no idea how when they're not doing anything. And this futuristic city, Magnus kind of grew up by himself at the bottom of an ocean with this robot training him to have strength and to be able to hit robots in certain locations. I don't know if he manifests super strength. At least they don't mention it here. They say super strength once, but later on it kind of represses the word super strength and just makes you think that he was trained extensively to be able to hit robots. He also has the ability that 1A put in his a chip in his brain that allows him to be able to like tune in to what the robots are communicating, because when they communicate over the airwaves and stuff, they're not communicating in a language that a human can understand. So he's able to absorb that and be able to tell what they're thinking before they actually execute on it. And that's how he's able to get away. And one of the things he runs across is a bunch of boys and girls. They look like maybe middle school, maybe high school, but I'd say middle school. They're reading a history book, and they're talking about Hitler, 1945, and what a tyrant he is. And one of the boys is saying, well, robots are tyrants. They try to boss us people and try to do stuff, just like my dad said. He starts speaking against them, and this robot comes, "That book is forbidden. Humans might try such adventures again and come to harm." And he basically takes the book and rips it in half. And the boy, you know, tries to fight against him, but he's robots know better than humans, must, you know, protect humans and all this bullshit. Well, the boy and another boy push the robot over the ledge to crush him, but he's able to report it back to the central police station to Central Rob. And the boys are now in jeopardy if they don't get out of there. Magnus is like, I need to get these, you know, help these kids out. And Paul Robs do arrest these kids, and Magnus gets in there, and he's like, furniture, knocking the heads off, beats the shit out of them, pulls their heads off, saves the kids. And, wow, the kids are like, he smashed the Paul Robs with his bare hands. Who are you? And he says, I'm Magnus. Do not be afraid. And that's pretty badass. And then he knows that the Paul Robs will be looking for him, so he has to, like, scale a building downward, like, crawling between the building because they would spot him otherwise. And he knows he can't take any vehicles and such, but he runs into another character, Lijah, and she's the main female character in Magnus, and she's driving a car and speeding, and she gets a Paul Robb, you're speeding in dangers, you and other humans slow down to legal speed. And she's like, fuck you, robot. She like sticks her finger out the window and she's like, motherfucker, you guys can't take over the world. And she puts the pedal to the metal, tries to escape. They eventually pull her over and are going to take her to the Central Rob. And Magnus comes in and saves her and smashes up a bunch of other robots. And they say, we can't be in the car. And he actually thanks her for saving her, because she gets him in the car. And they take off to a lower part of the city. And she wants to hang out with them, because she says, you know, my dad's a senator, Senator Klain, and I'm now a hunted robot register, so I'm glad to be with you. And I need you to protect me, kind of thing. And that he knows he needs to get the Central Rob to get this robot who's manifest himself to suppress humans. And he's trying to figure out a way to get there. Plus the Central Rob 8, who we'll call H8, he has put out a manifest that says if Magnus doesn't report himself in, that he will destroy a good portion of the city and kill humans. So he had like 1 hour to do what he needs to do. So he's under a time crunch. Gives you a couple of his backstory, you know, about him growing up, learning the history. He's reading Thomas Jefferson, solar state physics, all kinds of stuff. And he said that he's had so much training that his muscles and nervous system to steel smashing strength. So he runs into another police Rob, which he electrocutes. And when he electrocutes that robot, he pulls that robot up, he opens it up, and he steals and reprograms the chips inside that robot. And he says, well, the way I can get to the Central Rob from here is if this robot, if I program him to arrest me but be under my command. So he basically says, I'm going to get arrested, and I'll get as close to this other police chief robot, and I'll smash him. And that's what his goal. And he said, otherwise, I wouldn't be able to penetrate this in time, because he's under the time crunch. And Lijah says, I want to go with you. And he's like, no, you need to stay behind, because this is a dangerous job, Lijah. And she's like, Magnus, I got to come with you. And then she eventually gets in the situation where more Paul Robs come, and they arrest both of them. But he's still got that one programmed. And they basically are brought into H8, and he's going to says, well, I'm going to judge you right now. Kind of like Judge Dredd, right? Which is also has some really cool concepts on this particular theory. Another movie that's like this but not like this is like Blade Runner. Because Blade Runner, you got clones, and you got these replicants. And these replicants, they start to manifest. They're created in labs and shit. But they start to, become human. And that's crazy. And then there's other sci-fi shit where I've seen where, all these wealthy people will, like, grow a clone of themselves. And when their fucking liver fails, they'll take that clone liver and put it in them. And then that clone is, even though they're not robots, these clones have a same mentality of, you know, gaining their humanity. So, you know, Blade Runner is another one. So I would recommend that you check out. Judge Dredd is another fantastic sci-fi that'll do all kinds of shit with this stuff. There's probably many more other examples that I can think of if I thought for a long period of time. But H8 smacks Robot Fighter around for a while, and he says, "You and Leisure are going to be terminated." And it looks like that's going to happen, but you got to remember that he has that one droid under his control. So that's what frees him. But before that, he gets freed, he Hate actually takes him. He's the main central robot. He takes him to see where he's plugged in a bunch of people into this machine. Like, one of his main computers is actual human brains, and they help him determine stuff. And it's a bunch of these guys that are held in stasis, and they're suspended animation, but their brains are being used for this supercomputer. And he uses them, and he says, "Well, if I cut the current, they'll all die." So it makes you think if anything goes wrong, all these humans will die because they're just in this machine. So he actually uses his robot. He's like, "Release me, 5E5," and 5E5 releases him. And then he goes after Hate immediately and starts to hit him hard and hit him. But Hate is strong, so he's actually holding his own. And another Polrob, Z16, actually starts going against 5E5, and it becomes a huge slugfest. But Magnus starts to get the upper hand and starts to smash Hate. And the computer actually, they hit a switch where Hate actually crashes into the switch on the computer where he has those humans hooked up to. It's almost like. This sounds disgusting, but in a Motel Hell, in Motel Hell, they're growing these humans in like a fucking, they'll like plant them in the ground and then cut their throats. So like the moon comes up and then you'll just hear a bunch of heads going, "Ah," and then he makes pork out of them. But this is kind of like what reminds me of these people that are in these machines. But eventually they're able to shoot an electric fire blast at H8 and destroy him. So he got assistance from the computer, and then he helped free all these people. And then his goal is to he knows that there's other robots out there that have the same programming, even if they're maliciously programmed or might have been hit by this lightning and have changed their programming, and he needs to change it if humanity has a chance of survival. And it looks like Leisha is going to be there by his side. And what a fantastic fucking issue. It totally holds up. You read it now, and all the concepts and stuff are really nice. It just, the art is beautiful. Russ Manning does a really wonderful job. Wow, it's got a foreword by Mike Royer. I think he's an inker for Jack Kirby, if I'm thinking right. But I got sidetracked. So yeah, the only thing weird is a lot of the outfits I could see actually being futuristic outfits. Leisha's outfit is really sexy, at least I think it is. The weird outfit is Magnus. You know, he was living underground, and I guess that robot gave him nothing to wear, so he has this like tunic, like a Roman dress with a belt around it that has an M on it, and it's got like little scales like the Aquaman yellow top part looks like, except it's red. And he's got boots, and he shows his legs, and man, his shorts are really close to, they're low cut, like a mini dress. So it's a very unusual style. And if they ever made a movie or a comic, or I mean a cartoon about this, I wonder if they would go with it. I would love to see it like maintain its classic vintage look, but I don't think it would ever happen that way just because it's so goofy. Whereas I think Leisha and a lot of these other people that are dressed, Leisha kind of looks like something that came out of Logan's Run. If you remember that sexy woman, oh my God, when Logan goes to her room, and she's got that green. I remember it distinctively, and that slit down the side where there's like no side and you can see the hips. But that's enough of that. Leisha's dress is pretty cool. It's very hip. The robots are kind of outdated, but they're very effective as far as their look. The other thing that's interesting technology-wise, you know, the city is very advanced. You got all these like George Jetson hovercrafts. That's another cartoon that pays that falls into this genre. The Jetsons. Go watch the Jetsons. Meet George Jetson. His boy Elroy. I'm sorry, I'm having too much fun. And it's a sad world when you can have fun talking to yourself. Yeah, the buildings look a little more sophisticated. There's very few trees and stuff, but they do exist. They have those George Jetson hovercrafts. And a lot of people travel like on these conveyor belts. And what they look like is if you go to the airport and you walk on those little speeding walkways, that's what these things are. And I would imagine that to walk at a reasonable speed, that these walkways are going a lot faster than what you see at the airport. They're doing that. But fucking awesome. Again, my name is Mike Myers. This is Valiant Versus. This is part one of Magnus Robot Fighter. We'll be talking about other copies of this and other Valiant things that come up. And any other things that come off the tip of my tongue. But if you're on eBay, be careful when you're selling. Valiant did pretty good on the sales numbers considering what happened. It'll be interesting to see what happens when things like Faith and Dr. Mirage come out. Dr. Mirage, we already know, is a low seller, sold well in trade, but not as a single issue. So those two books coming in and Ivar dropping out and Unity dropping out, I don't think that's going to hurt it much because those numbers are already pretty freaking low. We'll see. But thanks for listening. My name is Mike Myers. It's Mike at comicbooknoise.com if you want to get a hold of me. You can also go to Geek Brunch Podcast, and you'll find Valiant Versus there. I may start releasing the old episodes on that feed just as like a retro to catch up on this particular one. And then what else do I got? This is going to be hosted on geekbrunchpodcast.com. I need to get off my ass and get it on Stitcher, but right now you can subscribe on iTunes, or you could stream it just off the website and listen to it at your leisure. But what else do I got? Oh, my Twitter feed is at Mike Myers Brunch, and I'm also on the Valiant podcast, so if you like Valiant, you could check that out. But I also do DC Noise podcast. I do Geek Brunch podcast and Geek Brunch Retro podcast and so many others. But we will talk to you in the new year, and we hope the new year is good to you and full of comics, and be valiant, and I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Hey, waiting no more for you.